This is the 20th season of the Consumed podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Lewis. And this time around, I'm doing a quick retrospective with clips from the over 200 conversations I've had with eaters, drinkers, thinkers, and makers. I certainly can't include clips from all of them, so I stuck with the moments that have stuck with me over the last 5 years. I categorize them by the different kinds of guests I've had, so it's a great way for devoted listeners to look back or for casual listeners to dip in. I have so enjoyed reliving these moments, and I hope you will too. But first, a quick shout out to the Consumed podcast sponsors. Consumed is sponsored by Midstate Containers Cargo Storage Containers and Refrigerated Shipping Containers for sale and rent in California. You may not understand how Midstate Containers could change your life, but the truth is, many, many guests on the Consumed podcast use Midstate for their projects. Containers can serve as wine storage units for case goods, for private collections, and even tasting rooms. They can be refrigerated storage containers for breweries, kegs, and fruit during harvest for wineries. Midstate Containers outfits coolers and freezers for ranchers, farmers market growers, orchards, and butchers. Containers can make great pop-up coffee bars and berry containers for root cellars. My guest from season 10, Krista Flieger from Lonely Palm Ranch, uses her Midstate container for an office on her property. Other ideas include schoolrooms, music and photography studios, and there are other things that can be grown, stored, and processed in a Midstate container, so use your imagination and get on their website to request a quote, midstatecontainers.com. Slow Food Co-op's mission is to empower health and well-being in the community by providing quality groceries, local produce, and exceptional customer service. Slow Food Co-op sources from local producers, ensuring they offer their shoppers great food and household staples. Slow Food Co-op is your friendly neighborhood grocer, maintaining non-GMO standards and a variety of organic selections. You can find Slow's only community-owned grocery store open every day, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m., at 2494 Victoria Avenue in San Luis Obispo, California. And check out their website at slowfood.coop. So this one is the episode about chefs and restaurants. It's probably not a surprise that restaurants represent a huge amount of conversations on the Consumed podcast, but they're some of the most interesting too. Like the one I had with Fabian Tefera. She had just launched her pop-up Ethiopian restaurant, Ebony Slow. Today, it's a brick and mortar spot that's one of a kind between Santa Barbara and San Jose. During our conversation, we discussed what it was like for her to move from Ethiopia to the United States and what it was like to taste McDonald's the first time. She starts by talking about her young son, who asks her about McDonald's and fast food.
Because he was saying at some point, oh, you know, how come I never ate at McDonald's? Have you ever eaten at McDonald's? Yeah. I said, I did once when I first came to America because that's what you do. My mom got us burgers and I just said, there's sugar and this thing was such a weird...
You could taste that there was sugar in it?
It was a sweet hamburger. And I'm like, I thought hamburgers were... It was such a... Like, the mind and the taste buds were completely not communicating because I expected a burger.
Yes.
And this thing was a donut almost. It was so sweet to me.
You're blowing my mind right now because for someone who I've eaten... There are countless times I've eaten at McDonald's. I haven't in the past... You know, in my adult life, I haven't. But the fact that... We had it as a special treat, but you know, grandparents would buy it for us and it was regular enough in my diet that I can't taste. I mean, maybe now I could because I've been off it for so long, but I don't think I could have distinguished what was in it. I would have said there's sugar in this.
I was brand new. I just came from Ethiopia. I went to the mall near us and my mom's way of saying, hey, let me get you guys... she didn't even say, let me get you guys fast food. You go to McDonald's because...
This is American. You get to have your experience.
Yeah, we're in Queens. It's, you know, there's a shopping center. There's a big food court that everybody went to. And I remember there was a pickle in the middle. Now I know what a pickle is. I don't know what a pickle was. Mm-hmm. And that was like the only thing that had salty, like the real taste maybe, but I couldn't even get to the pickle. I couldn't eat it. So she says, okay, you guys don't want to eat this? She's shocked and... I guess next to it or two doors down or two stands down was Chinese food. So she got us, I remember this very specifically, was sweet and sour chicken or sour and sweet chicken. So it was very sticky.
Yes.
And it was just
gummy.
Gummy, and a bunch of chicken came. I'm like, okay, chicken, I can eat chicken. And I've never had sweet and sour together.
Mm-hmm. And that's chicken processed like a donut. Yeah. I mean, you know, battered and fried.
So your mind thinks chicken. And you, so I couldn't eat that either. And my mom's just like, okay, I guess we'll go home and make something. So I loved the fries. I mean, I ate the fries. So that was because I had it right away that I never really craved it, because I knew that was just not. Mm. And I'm so grateful, because if I tried it maybe, you know, 5 years after I've lived here, then I would have adjusted and might have loved it. But to me, it wasn't because it was good. It was bad. I had no idea if it was good for you, bad for you. I was not aware at all by any means.
It was about the flavor.
I just could not eat sweet dishes that are not supposed to be sweet.
I, of course, love meeting chefs who are new to me, but just as much, I enjoy learning new things about chefs and restaurateurs I've known for years. I got a pleasant surprise while talking with Jessica and Alberto Russo of Flower House in San Luis Obispo when I learned that in college, Jessica had majored in something close to my heart, and that it had interesting implications at her restaurant.
Oh my gosh, I love film. Mm. I love film. You know, I kind of wanted to produce. I feel like that's what I do at the restaurant.
I feel like you'd be a killer producer.
Oh, well.
You got it in you.
You never know. You never know. That door totally is not closed for me, you know. But, you know, the restaurant business is super similar to film. I mean, you're kind of like running a production every night, and it's very hands-on and high stress, but never boring.
Yeah.
So it's very similar, but I was just totally drawn to it.
Mm-hmm. To producing it? To making productions, to producing films.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, absolutely.
What's one of your favorite movies? I know that's so hard to ask.
Oh my gosh. Oh, there's so many.
Even just one of I realize
this
it's
is
like,
going to be like so cheesy because it's like, oh, of course she would pick this. She's Italian American, but I do love The Godfather, and I always have.
Yeah.
So
that's a legit choice. It's not cheesy at all.
I mean, I feel like so many people have that choice, you know, love The Godfather. I love Star Wars. I always have.
You like sagas.
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I really, really do. God, what's another one of my favorite films?
Have you seen all the Star Wars?
No.
He's not a Star Wars guy.
You know what? I married a Star Wars guy, and he forced me to watch all of them in my late 30s, 40s, it's not the same. Yeah. You have to be around. You have to appreciate it as a child.
Yes, exactly.
Totally. Yes.
She tried it, and we started to play a little bit, and I fall asleep.
Yep, totally.
Which I almost always do fall asleep when we watch a movie.
Yes.
But that time was like, it didn't even start it. I was asleep. Like, no way I'm going to watch it.
No. Yeah. No, totally. And I fall asleep too. Almost every time. Yeah. Those big saga movies. That's amazing. Flower House on any given night. It's like a big production.
Oh, absolutely. It is.
Greg and Chef Daisy Ryan and their restaurant Bells in Los Alamos. They were just beginning to bloom on the Central Coast dining scene when I interviewed them for the Consume podcast. Since then, they've earned accolades that include a Michelin star, Food and Wine Magazine's Best New Chef, and Esquire's Best New Restaurants. They've also started a restaurant group and opened several other restaurants. But the thing I appreciate most about Greg and Daisy is the organization they started during the pandemic called Feed the Valley, which partners with area restaurants to cook for locals experiencing food insecurity. When they came over, they brought their son Henry, who was just a little guy at the time. As usual, I asked each of them what their final meal would be, including Henry, though Daisy just asked him what his favorite food was. And the answer, in case you miss it amidst all the excitement, is pasta. My kind of guy. Greg is the first to answer here.
My final meal would be probably Daisy's roast chicken and probably some sort of lemon curd dessert that she would make.
Really?
Yeah, you're making my last meal. I'm sorry.
You're gonna have to die on separate days. And a lemon curd dessert. That's
it. Those two things.
Shrimp cocktail. I love shrimp cocktail.
I was like, there's no seafood.
I got to tell you,
like,
also,
there's no seafood in also, that,
I'm
in like, that meal,
now,
Greg.
I'm a little hungry right now, so I'm not necessarily thinking as, straight? Yeah.
I was going to say, you love octopus.
I do. I do, but at the end of the day, there's just.
Okay, all right.
I'll do, yeah. You know what? I'm going for it. Final answer. Shrimp cocktail into a roasted chicken.
Roll with it.
Lemon curd.
That's and good. It is about being at the end of the day. It's about the thing. Yeah. It's not necessarily the thing you indulge in.
Yeah, you can say like
that's busy. A very appropriate comment for how we feel about bells. What do you want to eat at the end of the day? And what's the food that people are going to come back and eat?
Yeah.
And it's that kind of, that's that thing.
Daisy.
Oh my God. Okay. Carbonara. May I answer?
You can answer.
probably oysters. Really good oysters. Island Creek are still some of my favorite. And carbonara, my mom's carbonara. I'm not really a dessert person, so I'd probably go with a cheese course, although lemon curd is really something that I would want, and champagne. It's my favorite thing.
That sounds good. Should we
and have a Negroni and a martini. Oh.
All of them.
Yeah.
All
of them. It's my last day. I don't really care like what my hangover is tomorrow.
You're dying of cirrhosis. Yeah.
Sounds like you're drinking your dinner.
No, but I've got the carbs.
Oh, okay,
so
got
I'm
it,
okay.
Got it.
Totally. Do you think Henry wants to answer?
Should Let's we ask him. Henry, can we ask you a question? Can you speak into the microphone?
You talk?
Can you say hi?
What's your favorite food?
Pie.
Yeah, that's my boy. That's my boy.
Like everyone on the Central Coast, I've had some of my finest meals at Ember in Arroyo Grande, the restaurant founded by Chef Brian Collins and his wife Harmony Collins. They really started something important and new there at the corner of Grand Avenue and Briscoe Road. Interestingly enough, the Collinses just sold Ember early this year, and I know everyone wishes them well in this next chapter of their lives. But in this interview from 2019, Brian was very much still in the thick of it. And he had a quick answer to one of my questions. What were the surprises along the way from being, you know, there's a difference between being a sous chef or on staff mm-hmm. and then all of a sudden being an entrepreneur.
Right.
And, you know, to that end also, what was it like to, just tell me what some of the surprises were, things you didn't anticipate.
Taxes? Jesus. My Lord.
You had that on the tip of your tongue.
Yeah. You know what? The government takes a big old bite. So,
yeah.
No, but honestly, yeah, that was the biggest surprise. It's just like, whoa, okay, this is real. It immediately made me appreciate every single employer I'd ever worked for in my life. Oh, like, whoa, okay. Like even if you're the head chef to a certain degree, if you're an employee, when you leave at the end of the night, you can leave work at work.
Right.
When you're the owner, you know, if you're ever not there, it's always kind of in the back of your mind.
I also talked final meals with Chef Julian and Courtney Aseo from one of my all-time favorite restaurants, though I don't get to go nearly enough, Le Petit Canaille in Paso Robles. Specifically, we talked about the Hidden Valley Ranch packet and how it is key to Courtney's final meal.
For me, my grandmother, and she's getting older now where she doesn't cook like she used to. She makes the best fried chicken. Mm-hmm. Julian can even say you've had it.
Yeah, and especially with like, it's unbelievable because she makes a ranch from, it's got to be the Hidden Valley packet.
I was going to say, it's not from scratch. Like, she uses the Hidden
but
Valley.
But
she gets the packet.
But with the buttermilk and this whole, like, fried chicken tenders that she makes is so good. I would do that with her ranch.
Industrial ranch.
Amazing,
and you industrial ranch.
But not from a bottle.
No, it's not from a bottle. It's got to be from the packet.
The industrial ranch complex. Yeah.
It's got that
it's real.
MSG umami that you can't find when you make it your own.
And then I would do some sushi.
Oh, yeah.
And I would probably do caviar.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I forgot caviar and truffle on mine, too. Might as well.
Yeah, throw that in there.
Just on top.
But that would be... I'm kind of simple. I mean, I like my fried chicken
She's
with some
caviar.
She's
not that simple, yeah.
If you listened to the podcast in its first year, you might remember my interview with Chef Chris Dillo from Fig Good Food, a restaurant in Templeton that serves farm-to-table breakfast and lunch and provides vocational and employment opportunities for adults with intellectual and developmental disabilities. She was joined by kitchen staff member Evan Tui, and the two of them talked about their work together at the restaurant. As a side note,
After the podcast aired, I got word that Chef Chris had had a life-threatening brain hemorrhage the following April. She survived, thank goodness, and emailed me to say the recovery is 100% and that she went straight back to work full-time as soon as her doctors let her. Okay, here's Chris and Evan. So, Evan, you've been with Courtney's House for how long?
I first started working there as an intern back in May 2019. Mm-hmm. And then just a few weeks ago, they offered me a full-time position.
Paid position.
That's just a few weeks ago. Nice.
Yeah. We hired him onto our staff. Yeah.
That's awesome. So what do you do now?
Now I am currently working in the kitchen because it is my dream career to become a chef.
It is. You're in the right place, I think.
For sure.
Definitely. Yeah. I was actually inspired by Gordon Ramsay.
Oh, do you get angry like Gordon?
No, that's not my nature.
I doubt that. He's a fiery guy. Yeah. So what do you, now that you're full time, are you in the kitchen the whole time? Are you out in the house on the floor? Or?
Yes. Most of my days I am in the kitchen, but I am like in the house actually serving on Thursdays with a new schedule, new hours.
And what do you, since you've been there, how have things changed for you? How have you grown?
I guess since I first started working there, I feel like I've grown a little more on the social side because before coming here, I wasn't really too sure how to approach people and how to start conversations. Mm-hmm. But I think this has really helped change that.
Because you interact with people all the time, I'm sure.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, and I can't think of a much more interactive place than the back of house for a kitchen.
Yeah.
You know, where you have to turn things out on time. It has to be safe. It has to be clean. Yeah.
Have to follow recipes. There's a lot to it.
Yeah.
But really you started as host. We generally like to bring interns in, try them in different positions, see what sticks. Mm-hmm. Evan kept saying, I really want to be a chef someday. And we kept putting him out front because he's so friendly and that smile. Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Aww. So people really do enjoy talking to him.
Yeah. Chef Clark Staub of Full of Life Flatbread in Los Alamos is someone I'd known was cool from a distance. But when I got to know him on the podcast, I learned he's actually far cooler than I ever could have believed. In addition to slinging killer farm-to-table pizzas at the restaurant, he's also a former record store clerk who worked his way up to becoming vice president of marketing at Capitol Records. That's what we talk about here, and I admit, I got a little starstruck. Who's a musician that's really cool?
A lot of them.
Well, I know, but I want one in particular.
Like cool as a person?
Yeah.
Oh, Dave Grohl's like one of the nicest people on earth.
I believe that.
He's just, yeah. Ben Harper is another one. But yeah, Dave Grohl, I worked a little bit with Nirvana, and then I worked with the Foo Fighters through their first two records. Mm. And he is just, that entire band is just so nice.
And they're still together, which says something, you know.
They just put a brand new record out.
Yeah. That's right. They were promoting it on
Saturday
SNL.
Night Live. Yeah.
Yes. And have you seen the little girl who plays drums, Nandi Bushell, the little British girl who plays drums with Dave Grohl? She's, I think, 10.
Oh, no.
I will send you the link. Okay. I will put the link on the app. It's so great. He seems like such a nice guy because he's indulging this 10-year-old girl and they're like doing
great stuff. And I worked for 7 years with Michael Franti and Spearhead.
Yeah.
And another just genuinely 100%. There's like a video, you know, because he's I have a long history with him, but he's really he's created his own universe.
Yes.
And I you know, when Spearhead started, he wanted so badly, I think, to be part of this hip hop culture, and he's just created something much more
so positive.
And there's a video, I'll see if I can send it to you, of one of his, you know, he's sitting under a tree with, like, I want to say she's 7 or 8, a little girl who's just playing guitar and wailing through one of his songs. Like,
that's amazing.
And his look on his face is just of amazement, pure amazement.
Yes.
So,
those kind musicians who see something in the next generation, who have the energy to indulge them, is so great.
Yeah.
So great.
But it was fun. It was, you know, it was a good, I left of my own accord in 1998 to go open a bread bakery.
Because you were super, you were passionate into this new phase of life with the
bakery. Yeah, I was just getting to the point where I'd done a lot. My big major projects, Radiohead and the Beastie Boys. And
wait, so, back up. Why is Radiohead one of your big projects? What did you do?
I was basically the project manager for the bands and OK Computer and Meeting People is Easy. And so we went, you know, all over the world with them. And
amazing.
You know, because that first record, I wasn't there for the first record. I took them on with My Iron Lung, which was the next single after the first record. But they, you know, the first record was really kind of a one-hit wonder here in America and nowhere else in the world. And then, so when I started working with them, we really started to try to work towards expanding that base. And we did.
Speaking of music, that plays a massive part in my interview with Jeff, Lindsay, and Jade Jackson of the Range Restaurant in Santa Margarita, California. Locals likely know the Jackson family for their category-defying steakhouse. But outside of town, Jade Jackson is known far and wide as a country music singer-songwriter, and much of it is owing to her dad, who played music in the house and restaurant constantly as she was growing up. Here, Jeff talks about his affinity for sad music, and Lindsay and Jade chime in.
Sad music makes me work harder for some reason. I don't know. I hear jolly oom-bop and I'm like, ugh. And I hear something sad and I just get pissed off inside and I work better, faster, harder. You know, it's like, I'm just weird that way. I don't know.
It's the blues though, isn't it? I mean,
it's the blues. That's what it is. Maybe it's the, just different blues, you know, different style. But, you know, it all started with, can't think of his name, Jimmy Rogers, you know, and that was basically the blues. And you know, I think he was the start of country music. But Johnny Cash definitely was my idol, and Elvis, of course. But I just grew up, I was weird. I was playing Glenn Campbell in high school and stuff. And people are like, what the hell? And I'm like, dude, you got to listen to it, man. Listen to the words, you know? You know, and then like, well, this guy's lost it, you know? But that's just the way I've been. And Tammy Wynette, of all female singers, my favorite. And when I met her, I made her listen to it. And it was kind of a test. If she likes it, she's a keeper. And if she don't...
brought over Glenn Campbell and Johnny Cash. I'm like, what is this?
Oh, you were. You weren't already a fan.
No, we were actually like into punk music. We would go to shows all the time. And then he brings over this... I never heard of Johnny Cash or Glenn Campbell. I was like, what is this music, you know? But it grew on me real quick, you know. Yeah.
But punk, I used to go to the punk shows too because I was like a rockabilly kid. But punk is basically country music. It's the same. It's poverty driven, the depressed, the pushed down, the lost, you know, or something. You know, I mean, it's like poverty driven music. That's my favorite music. I don't want that skippity doo dah stuff. You know what I mean? I do like that, and I understand that, and people like that, and it makes them feel good. And I'm not trying to take it away from them, but for me, I like the stuff that reminds me of my past and stuff. You know?
Well, and so a lot of that comes through in what Jade is playing. Didn't you open for like Merle Haggard or something? There's some crazy thing where you were opening for some country musician or like a country Western musician. Do I have that right?
Yeah. For those of you who aren't familiar with Santa Margarita, it's, in the heart of the Central Coast, and there was, I don't know if it is any longer, but there was a venue out on the 58 called the Pozo Saloon.
Still there.
And so a lot of the big country acts would go in and play there. And like I was saying earlier, when I would play on the patio, some of the customers would be like, oh, have your daughter come play at the winery or whatnot. But the guy whose mom, I think he co-owned it with his mom, Levi, who owned the Pozo Saloon.
Levi and Rhonda. Them a lot.
Yeah, they saw me playing when I was 16. I was on the patio, and they said, do you want to come open for the Charlie Daniels Band? We need an opener. So that was my first big show, And then he asked me back again for Dwight Yoakam and for Merle Haggard and I opened for Social Distortion out there and, you know, a handful of country artists out there, kind of just as the first act that went on before, you know, the crowd showed up, but still it meant a lot to me.
Oh, for sure. But you made a leap there from Charlie Daniels and Merle Haggard to Social Distortion.
It gave me a clear vision of where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do. And that it was maybe, I was close enough that I could kind of taste it in a way. So that kind of fired me up a lot and gave me fuel to move forward.
Hypothetically speaking, if someone could convince me to rate my favorite episodes of the Consume podcast, I think this one would be at the top. We're talking hypothetically here, of course. I enjoy each episode, no matter what it's about. But this one with Maggie Cameron, the owner of The Hatch and Della's in Paso Robles, is special. We laughed so, so hard. When I went to choose clips for these retrospectives, I thought, surely that episode isn't as funny as I remember it being. But then I listened, and yes, it really is that funny. Here, Maggie and I talk about our experiences with East Coast Pizza, and I'm sorry, poor listener, it's mostly me talking on this clip. But it's the fact that Maggie came along with me for the ride and caught the vision completely that makes her my unofficial favorite.
You know, I'm always on the search for good pizza, and Flower House and Slow does a great job. I love
their
pizza. God,
don't they ever. Oh,
they do. They really do, and they're just, they're great people too. But yeah, that was always going to be like, cause it's also comfort food, you know, and because I am such a hospitality person, like I want people to come into my restaurants and just be like super comfortable rather, whether they're, you know, a local rancher or coming from San Francisco,
you want them to feel good.
Yeah. And have fun.
Yeah.
Cause I think if anyone's, you know, if people are having fun, then they're, it's about the whole experience, right?
For
so
sure.
Anyway, so pizza, total comfort food for me. Anytime I go back east, that's the first thing we do every single night.
Yeah.
First night when I go back, we'll get a big pizza. And it's usually Greek, you know, there's usually like, there's a big, like in Connecticut, a big faction of Greek pizzerias. Yeah. And so that's like, that is my heart and soul. And it's like gut bombs, you know, they're big, crispy, thick crust, lots of cheese, lots of sauce, lots of stuff
make,
on top.
Though.
That's not what we
okay,
make.
Okay, so since you don't make it like that, I can say I can't stand East Coast pizza, which is...
You're insane.
No, I'm not.
But it is, you're right, it is a totally different experience,
it's
right?
It's completely different. And New Yorkers are so just incorrigible about pizza.
Mm-hmm,
they think
mm-hmm.
they've got it all nailed down,
oh, yeah.
that it's like OG, and I don't know. It's just not my, it's not my taste in
yeah.
it. I'll eat it. It's fine. But it almost feels like it's more tart or something. And I don't think the average like corner pizza place mm-hmm. ferments their dough.
No.
Do you think? I don't think so.
I don't think so. But it's, you know, for them, it's cooked sauce and it's all about the, you know, the sauce. So it's, you know, it's darker. It's,
The cheese is treated
richer.
Differently.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like now maybe I've just had really bad stuff. I don't know. There was this place, just because you're a storyteller, I don't mind sharing this. There was this place called...
I'm so excited.
In Poughkeepsie. If you were feeling flush with cash from, you know, I had a job taking the disc with the newspaper, the school newspaper. I drove it in a van across the Hudson to the printer.
No way.
So this is how old, this is how far back we're going.
It was like a disc. What do you, like a Frisbee? No, a floppy disc.
No, a disc that I would drive in a van. How efficient is that?
Yeah,
in like
so
a
good.
13 passenger van.
Yeah.
Drive it across the river, drop it off. And I had to do it really early in the morning. Anyway, so from my campus job doing that, if I felt flush with cash, you would order out. And so we ordered from a place called, it was called Napoli's, but we called it Naps, which even as I sit, like I feel bile in my throat. So Naps was
Naps.
The grossest
That's
place.
Amazing.
But if you were going to get pizza, calzones, or like grinders, that's where you would go. And I remember one time I didn't have it delivered to my dorm room. I went in person there and I had never been before. So now I'm
so gross.
Seeing where the food was made.
No.
And it was like, I'm sorry. At the counter, there was a baby. A baby stroller with like a
crocheted blanket over it. There was a baby finger, like a coming. It was like,
stop.
Through one of the holes in the
no
crochet.
Way.
And the baby was asleep, I think. But there were no adults around
did
anywhere.
Did the baby belong to Naps? Like, was it like...
But I haven't even told you the best part. The best part is I'm coming to pick up this pizza. And on the counter, there's this orange prescription for Valtrex, which is herpes medication.
Stop.
So,
oh, this is so amazing.
Oh my gosh, oh, I was with my roommate, and without missing a beat, she's like, I'll take cheese pizza with like, you know, antipasto stuff, extra Valtrex, please. God, but anyway, just that's the place I think of when I think of.
I love that you still ordered the pizza. You were like,
oh, we took it home.
Yeah, yeah.
We were starving, you know, anyway, but just the baby finger with the, with the blanket and the Valtrex. It's just like, I can never eat here ever again. Of course I did, but.
Oh, that's so good.
That's it for this quick stroll down memory lane on the Consumed podcast. To hear these interviews and many others, head to letsgetconsumed.com where you can search and peruse episodes, see photos, and get recipes. You can also sign up for the Consumed newsletter list, which offers updates on the podcast, more recipes, and even more than that. Special thanks to Chris Lambert for doing the original editing on all these episodes, and to Alexandra Wallace for the lovely collage celebrating the 20th season. Until next time, I'm Jamie Lewis.